webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, the 27th of April, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism where we live. I fly sprayed myself out of existence. Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Thursday, the 27th of April, 2017, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum, but right now from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida, bringing you more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, and a whole bunch of coughs from the fly spray.
Hello, Bears.
Hang on. I haven't finished yet. Is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams, the voice you just heard, actually.
I wasn't really sure you were going to be able to say anything else after exterminating a fly. You almost exterminated yourself.
Man.
With the fly spray. Goodness gracious, there was a cloud of smoke went up in your house, and it looked like one of those TV demonstrations of a nuclear bomb going off, and you just sprayed a fly, and then you almost incinerated yourself in the same vapor.
Man, I tell you what, I have this thing about flies.
Oh, you love them, eh?
Thinly spread on toast. With a little pepper and salt. Yes, yeah, sure, I love them, mate. Oh, man, I felt like chasing that one across my whole property here, 1.7 acres of it, with a shovel. Anyway, he's not moving anymore. But then again, neither am I just about.
For a while, you weren't either, so.
Yeah. Oh, hey, listen, mate, last week with Michael Blanche, I fell about myself with that lad. I can't tell you how much I enjoy. Now, please, Michael Blanche, if you're listening to this, don't take this wrong, please. And anybody else out there that may have a disability, and Michael Blanche doesn't have a disability as far as I know. But
he doesn't?
Yeah, you may have several, actually. But I got through, and Jeff, as usual, about 3 o'clock Florida time, so rings me up. Hey, where's the podcast? I got to proof it and get it out. And I said, are you kidding me? I've only edited Mike Blanche once before, and I should have known, but I forgot. I started at 5 a.m. in the morning editing, and at 3 p.m. Alabama time, I was still editing. And I said to Jeff, does he have a stammer? And he said, well, it kind of sounds like a stammer, but it's just he's just got so many words that he needs to get out, and they're all tumbling over each other.
They all run at the gate at the same time. Yeah.
Oh, but mate, what a great podcast! I mean, the guy was amazing. I just love what he has to share every time he's on.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about a good heart. It's very difficult to offend Michael.
It's very difficult to understand him at times.
Yes, when he speaks like I do, he is hard to be understood.
But when you get what he's saying, I loved those three words he shared last week. It was good. I mean, generosity. That's something. Abundance and generosity. That's something.
Yeah.
Compassion. How little of that do we see?
Yeah, exactly.
It was good stuff.
For sure.
This week we have so many emails to get through and so much to get through.
I know.
Yeah. I don't even think we're going to get to the letter, but let's see what happens. We heard this week from Jeff Berman, who said the subject was, where did Jesus refer to the law as your law? Now, I'm not sure where that's coming from, but He says, Mike, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the work on Teaching Christ and the Risen Christ CDs.
Many times I don't see our emails until we're actually on here, but I did read that one. And I remember somebody making that comment about your law. I may have repeated it from something I heard someone say, but it's just completely gone from me. I don't think that the question is without warrant, but I'm just not recalling anything.
I wonder if he's talking about when the law came down from Sinai that the Israelis said, this shall be unto us our righteousness.
I don't think it's that. I think he's referring to something that Jesus said. I'm recalling somebody saying that Jesus called it your law. I don't know. Maybe Jeff said it. I don't know.
Oh, if Jeff said it, it's bound to be wrong.
I mean, we got to find somebody to blame for this.
We do. Jeff? Hey, actually, yeah, this email went to Jeff at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. And by the way, if you have any questions, why don't you send them to freedom@gospelrevolution.com? That way we can blame Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff, help us out here. I'm not sure if this guy listens, Jeff Berman, if he listens to the podcast or not, or if he came in from another channel. But maybe if you could contact him and ask him more precisely what he means. But let me go on with this, mate.
Sure.
He says, so first of all, I'd like to thank you for work on the Teaching Christ and the Risen Christ. Oh, hang on. This is something you did in Calgary a couple of years ago. I know
yeah,
now.
It really is.
We're going to have to listen to this. I have that sermon on repeat. Oh, he calls it a sermon. That's a bad sign right there. I have this sermon on repeat. Still attending a church that professes grace in its name, but teaches Jesus, but, and grace, kinda. I love yeah. it. I love it, Jeff. My question is, where in the Bible does Jesus say your law? Well, I think we've already referred to the fact that we might have to come back to this next week. And he says, I am new to reading the Bible and I can't find it in the Bible. I have looked on the internet and can't find a single verse. Thanks in advance. Right now, where Michael is, and I'm looking at his face on a video right now, and I'd say from where I am, we don't know where it is in the Bible either. So
no, we don't. I'm not real sure what he's referring to, and I'm not denying that someone on this part of the globe didn't say it or repeat it because I remember it for some reason, Darius.
No, you did a teaching in Calgary on the Teaching Christ versus the Risen Christ.
Yes, that I've got, yes.
So we're going to get this. Jeff, my friend Michael is going to go on for a long time about now explaining this, but I'm just going to circumvent that by saying, help us remember, please, and we will answer it, because almost invariably we were conscious when we were teaching these things, so we'll try to get back to that for you.
We should say consciousness was a possibility at the time, so.
Oh dear, dare I refer to, oh no, being down in that bar at that hotel. Now, also this week, we had an email from Victor Brennan.
Yeah.
Now, that's an unusual thing. This must be very important. We better listen up to this. He says, fellow travelers, sorry, that was fellow travelers on the road to glory, but he's left out on the road to glory. He says, who said I was living in Hawaii?
Well, we decided just to promote him is what it was. because he goes there for like 2.5 months every year, we're all jealous of him. So we just accuse him of living there all the time now. So,
but what made you say that last week? I mean, he must have told you he was going or something.
No, I think living here in Florida distorts time for me.
Oh, it does, yes.
Winters and summers mean nothing. We had a cool front come through, and I thought it was wintertime up north. And that means it dropped to 70 to 72 degrees in the daytime.
Oh, the humidity.
And I just knew that meant that Vic was in Hawaii, and it was Christmas time. So I get a little mixed up occasionally. So
he continues, I could only wish the dream would come true. You.
That's what we're hoping for you, Vic. We're speaking that out there to the universe.
And then he says, cold and snowy Calgary is still our dear home. Having fun. Now, firstly, I want to observe that he just says fellow travellers. And apparently we're not any longer fellow travellers on the Glory Road with him. And frankly, this disturbs me, Vic, because I'd only just gotten used to your poetic strain, and now apparently I'm disturbed. I'm just very disturbed. In fact, my teachers said that to my parents too. So I don't know where to go from there, except I'm disturbed. I'm very disturbed.
Are we going to take a vote on that now or what?
Hell no! My mental state of mind, mate, is never up for debate. I am never wrong. I'm always right. And anything else that you want to add? Okay. We had, let me rush out of that to our next.
Let's do.
We had an email this week, which I think is going to be a very important email for us. And it was about the Luke 16, is it Luke 16, story about Lazarus and the rich man. We had an email from John Cowper this week. Barris said at one point, and John is referring to, I think, last week's Powercast. Barris said at one point, Jesus never quoted the New Testament. You are so kidding, right? John? Right.
Even I knew you were being facetious when you said that. And I'm always the last to catch on to you. So
here is the thing. Yeah, we do kid around, but we hope that most people get that we're kidding around, and I'm sorry that we confused you. Yep. Now, you might choose to send a new email in, but Paul also never read the New Testament. Neither did James. Neither did Peter. neither did John. Poor old John, he was out on the sidelines. But anyway, none of these guys read the New Testament, not the way we see the New Testament. So,
well, Jesus didn't have to speak the New Testament. Jesus, the New Testament was not the New Testament until after the death, burial, and resurrection. So the New Testament isn't something you speak. The New Testament is the blood of Christ. Jesus was the New Testament. There was no speaking it. Jesus' words are not New Testament. Jesus' words are Jesus' words, just like everybody else that is recorded there. The New Testament isn't these writings. The New Testament is Christ himself. The New Testament is a person. A New Testament was ratified in blood. So that is what the New Testament is. What sayest thou, Barris Bartlett?
Oh, I'm wordless, mate. I'm totally wordless. Every time I talk to you about stuff like this, I'm wordless. I'm waiting for you to say, oh, grasshopper. Okay, let's read on here.
Yeah, I'm still worried about that poor fly that you assaulted earlier.
Oh, grasshopper, that poor fly. No longer he worry me. Oh, and all for just $1.50. Okay, Jesus does quote the Old Testament as authoritative and inspired. Mm.
Yes.
John Cowper, you got
Amen.
It. Ain't that the truth?
Yes.
If there is no burning judgment, now here is an interesting turn of phrase, No, I'm going to read this through and then we'll go back through this.
Okay.
If there is no burning judgment, why does Jesus tell us about the rich man suffering in Luke 16 and 23? which says, in Hades, where he was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham from afar with Lazarus by his side. So he cried out, Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am in agony in this fire. Statistically, in the Gospels, Jesus mentions the torments of hell twice as often as he speaks of the joys of heaven. You reject judgment? Now, let me just say that.
That's a question mark, right?
Yeah, a huge. And he writes, he says, you reject judgment, question mark. Well, you, and I'm putting now my, I'm just speaking this the way I'm reading it. Well, you may be nicer than Jesus, but you are not more righteous, nor do you have a greater truth. Okay.
Well, that is 90% true, except the fact Barris is righteous. This is Christianity 101, Barris. This is really quite jumbled up, to be real honest with you about it. I wouldn't even know where to begin. The only thing I know to do is to let him know what Jesus had to say about judgment. Jesus was getting ready to go to the cross, and he said that he was going to take all judgment unto himself. So, yes, we do emphatically believe that judgment has passed, and it is Jesus that gets the credit for that. Yes, we do believe that Barris is righteous and not above anyone else.
I picked my nose, but I'm still righteous.
He is righteous in spite of one or two other things, actually. So.
Oh, dang, I didn't know you knew about them.
And but so are you, my friend. You are righteous and holy and perfect in the eyes of God. Disagreeing with us does not change that. Disagreeing with me, disagreeing with Barris, disagreeing with Jeff, disagreeing with the entire gospel revolution. You know, if you were to curse us, condemn us, sentence us to a burning hell ourselves, it doesn't change the fact that you, my friend, are righteous. You are holy. You are perfect in the eyes of God. You will face no judgment. Judgment has all passed upon Jesus. And for that, we are very grateful that you will be able to experience all of that. We hope that you get to experience it in this life, that this judgment has passed. We hope you get to experience in this life the fact that you are righteous, because whether you accept it or not, you are righteous. You are holy. What you believe and what you think cannot change the power of the work of the cross. This is the basic fallacy of Christianity, that man's persuasions can change the persuasions of God. And I just think that that is just fundamentally, completely wrong. Not to mention that, you know, we can quote not just verses and stories out of context, but we go through entire chapters, entire books. We've got series on the entire book of Romans, the entire book of Hebrews, most all of John, Ephesians, you know, the list goes on, and hopefully we'll go on because we want to get to a lot of these. In fact, I'm going to be teaching the book of James in Calgary this coming September.
Hang on. You're going to be what?
I'm going to be teaching the book of James.
Well, here's what I want to know, because I've heard maybe, oh gosh, I don't know. If I was saying I've heard 50 teachers teach on Revelation, I might be understating it. When are you teaching on Revelation?
I did that years ago. I don't think I'm going to do it again.
Why, was that so perfect when you did it first time?
It was absolutely perfect. There's no need to redo something that's perfect.
Oh, I think your pants are smoking. I think so.
So, yeah, we'll be doing the book of James, and hopefully that you would get to listen to that. We want you to know from the Gospel Revolution that you are loved, and we care about life for you and for everybody who listens to us and those who don't. But we want to make it clear that no matter the amount of insults that are hurled at us, we want you to know God's view and opinion of you. We want to make sure that you understand that the gospel perspective of this leaves you innocent of all charges. Even if we were to hurl insults at you, it would be in disagreement with what God thinks about you. That's what we want you to know. If there's something, Barris, about the letter that you would like to address a little further, we can. Number one, what about his statement that Jesus mentions this? Now, he said this place of burning fiery torment. Jesus mentions this place two times more than he mentions heaven in the New Testament. Is there any validity to that statement?
Reading the New Testament in either Greek or English, I don't see any validity for that.
Yeah, I do think that's correct. I mean, we could maybe go through and count all the times if anyone wants us to. Number one, we'd have to deal with the misperceptions of the word hell and its terms. But we've already done all of that. We would recommend some really good writings. Goodness, everybody in the Gospel Revolution does excellent teachings on the subject of hell. I have a 3-CD series entitled The Irrelevancy of Hell.
Oh, you don't talk about hell at all in that series. Well, here's what you do. I listened to that real carefully just recently, and all you do is say, okay, hell's not a gospel issue. Now, let's talk about something else. And that's all you say. Come on.
That's not true.
Oh, it is. Oh, hey.
That is an exaggeration of vast proportions.
Vast.
The history, the Greek, and also into the Hebrew, because there's a couple of places where the term hell shows up in the Old Testament.
Oh, mate, there's a lot of them. And guess what? It's always Sheol.
Yes, always Sheol.
And guess what? When it's talking about a really nice person, you know, this guy was really good and he was lovely to his wife and he threw great parties, and it's always the grave.
Yeah.
But when it's talking about a wicked person, guess what it always is? It's always hell.
Yeah.
I mean, just do a study on hell in the old.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is true. I think, well, Gary was one of my way stations on the way to the gospel of grace and peace. Wayne Jacobson was another. And there were all of these people who, although they may not be where we are, were a great place to vacation for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we give credit where credit is due. I've learned things from other people who don't agree with me at all, as stated about even the letter that we've been addressing, what, for the last 3 years on the podcast.
Feels like it, doesn't it?
But I did learn from Jim, and I'm very, very thankful about what I learned. Also, I learned something from Joel Osteen this week.
Hey, hang on, we haven't finished this letter. Is that what you want to do?
Again, unless you have something else to say about it.
I do. It's funny you should ask. I do.
And?
Oh, okay. All right. In this alleged parable, and I'm calling it an alleged parable, because when I was a kid in our gospel meetings in the Brethren Assemblies in Bethany Hall, South Brisbane, it was drummed home to us that this was not a parable. And the reason it was not possibly a parable is because Jesus always called a parable a parable. The Bible says, and he spoke to them in a parable saying. And it was pointed out to me that this was not a parable because it wasn't preceded by the statement that, and Jesus spoke to them in a parable saying. So this was presented to me as a real life reality that should scare the living daylights out of me because it was real. Jesus was talking about a real situation that happened. And presumably, no one can talk about a real situation that happens after they are talking about it. It has to happen before they're talking about it. Now, before Jesus is talking about this, you can search up and down, left and right, east and west, north and south, and you still won't find a Jew anywhere on the face of this planet who ever believes in heaven or hell. And the reason is because they did not understand anything about heaven and hell. So how was Jesus, even though he were an apocalyptic teacher, how was Jesus in any way referencing something that Jews in general didn't even believe in?
Yeah.
Now, that's the first point I want to make.
Point two.
Oh, you really want to rush me along, don't you? Most religious teachers of today have isolated this story from its original context and used it as a device for scaring people. That's, I guess, the first point. And let me tell you something right here, Mike. The reason I became a Christian, I was scared. People who preached to me when I was a kid did not love the hell out of me. They scared the hell out of me. There is only two basic human motivators. One is the hope of gain, and the other is the fear of loss. And both of them used to great effect here. I want to tell you, I became a Christian because of this story of hell. It's a parable. If it were a real story, there are several things we have to contemplate. I mean, for example, the rich man says, hey, can you send Lazarus to come and dip his finger in water and cool my tongue? Apparently, people in hell have bodies.
Yeah, and can receive nourishment.
And yeah, so what's in the actual grave? We now have two bodies? Something wrong here. If Jesus was speaking here in symbols, we have to ask, who were the symbols? Lazarus, the rich man. Who was the rich man? The Jews had been blessed above measure by a knowledge of God and his plan of salvation for Jews. They'd received the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of law and the services of God and the promises. Only a Jew would pray to Father Abraham. No one else would ever pray to Father Abraham. Only a Jew would do that. And that's what we find the rich man doing in this story. The Jewish nation was clearly represented by the character of the rich man. No question. And remember, he's speaking to Pharisees, and they believe that they're the creme de la creme of Jewish culture. Now, by contrast, Lazarus symbolized all those people in spiritual poverty, if you want to see it there, from the Jewish viewpoint, the Gentiles, with whom the Israelites were to share their heritage in the end. But the words of Isaiah were well known to the Jews. I will also give you for a light to the Gentiles, that you may be my salvation to the end of the earth, Isaiah 49 somewhere. But unfortunately, the Jews hadn't shared their spiritual wealth with the Gentiles at all, with the single exception, as far as we know, of Nineveh and Jonah. And do you remember how Jonah reacted to that? He wasn't just peeved. He was a whole lot peeved, right, Mike?
Yes, that's true.
And we know that there was a way that they could have brought Gentiles into their congregation, quote unquote, because they, by the third generation, they would have been accepted as real Jews. Yes?
Very true. Yes.
They were called strangers, and they were brought in, and then these Jews hadn't gone out to evangelize. What they wanted to do was protect. They hadn't gone out to include people in their righteousness. When Moses comes down from the mount, he says, they say, this shall be unto us our righteousness. Well, wouldn't you want to share that with people? You would think so. But anyway, and the Samaritan woman, she does the same thing. They used to call Gentiles dogs. The Samaritan woman says, but even the dogs lick up the crumbs from the table. So in this respect, he's talking to people who had hoarded the truth, who had kept the truth to themselves, and he was about to release the truth on the whole cosmos. But they didn't get that. So the next thing we see in this is the fact that they have to have bodies in hell. So what's left in the grave? They have to have bodies in hell because apparently you can thirst and you can feel all the things that bodily people feel. I mean, this thing just gets worse and worse for me. The Gentiles, who hungered and thirsted after righteousness, would be filled. The dogs, the sinners, so despised by the self-righteous Pharisees, would enter heaven before they would. He says, verily I say unto you that the publicans and harlots go into the kingdom of God before you do. And so these Pharisees have got some real questions to ask.
I think it's interesting, Barris, that we know that all the scriptures were about Jesus. The parables that Jesus spoke was about Jesus, you know. So it's just one thing that popped into my mind, Lazarus saying that he was thirsty. That's exactly what Jesus said on the cross. I thirst.
Wow.
Now, if you're talking about a man who's burning in the flames, the torments of the fire, unquenching of hell, to think that he would have the rationale or the reason to stop and say, I'm thirsty, and give out an organized request, it really is just, to take that in its most literal way is a bit irrational. We have had the unfortunate opportunity to see people actually burn to death, many of them deliberately. And, if they gave any expression at all, the one thing that they never said was, I'm thirsty. It's just, there's a lot of reasons to have questions about this and not make a doctrine out of it. But to have a lot of questions about it is a very, very good thing to have.
What I like about you, Mike, is that I can rave on, and then you just in a couple of sentences say something that makes actual sense. But let me finish.
Evidently, it wasn't that good.
Oh, dear. It wasn't good enough to stop me, but it was good enough to make me haul up and think for a piece. Here is an interesting thing. The miracle of raising the real life Lazarus from the dead, the real life one, Mary and Martha and their brother and that, was going to happen real soon after he told this this story. And in it, he confirmed the accuracy of the conclusion of this story, that one did rise from the dead. Yet the brothers of the rich man did not repent in this story. So one did rise from the dead. Even if one was to rise from the dead, they wouldn't believe, blah, blah, blah. And only a couple of chapters later, he does it.
Yeah.
I mean, the real life Lazarus, he rises from the dead. And still the Pharisees did not believe. How fascinating is that? What he was telling these people was a story about themselves, these Pharisees. In fact, the Pharisees even plotted to kill Lazarus after Jesus' resurrection. His very life was a reminder to them of their own hypocrisy. Now, here is another thought. I was taught that prior to Jesus' death, the saints were all in Abraham's bosom. And that is what's taught in this parable. I don't know what Abraham's bosom looks like, felt like, was like. I don't know what it's an allegory for. All I know is that when Jesus died, all of those people who lived from the first Adam until the last Adam,
yep,
Jesus, were all taken up in Jesus' body. Can we believe that all the saints are even now gathered in Abraham's bosom? How could they be if they were taken up in Jesus' body? How could these people who, in Hebrews 11:36, they without us cannot be made perfect, these saints, and also the sinners of the time, if these were all taken up in Jesus' body, how do we apply this parable now? This was a pre-cross story, and we must understand it contextually, both textually and temporally. In other words, both in time and in the text.
And you're right, Barris. I mean, at what point would these Pharisees have even been able to perceive what he's talking about, an afterlife of punishment? It's not taught anywhere in the scriptures in the Old Testament. They have not one, and as you said, still to this day, you can go to any synagogue, they're not going to have a clue what you're talking about. They know what Christians say, but thank God they dismiss what Christians say about hell. That, for me, is the real sticking point, is that how would the Jews have related to this other than a just a parable of some sort, because they were never taught of an afterlife of anything like this whatsoever. In fact, they just weren't taught of an afterlife whatsoever. That's just not there.
So, John Cowper, we really do appreciate your comments, because they help us to understand this was a story in the that Jesus told that confused me for a long time. Not the least of reasons being that I had the hell scared out of me, not loved out of me. I had this beaten into me as a child, and I mean that literally. I had this taught to me every day of my life until I elected to leave the, you know, the Brethren group, the fundamental evangelical group in which I'd learned it. And it so impacted me that until only just recently, and I'm speaking about the last month or so, actually, I first heard this discussed rationally around a swimming pool when I first, on the first occasion of my meeting Mike Williams, by a gentleman called Mel Martin. And it made more sense, and he likened this parable to the difference between law and grace. And I think he was right. But it was, I couldn't remember it. I tried to draw it back to mind, a memory, and I couldn't remember it. But it was only after I got your letter, John, and I received this, because all the letters that are sent to freedom at gospelrevolution.com, they all are sent to Mike and to myself. And it wasn't until I analyzed and thought and considered, and I said to Mike just the other day, we have to deal with this, because this is a question that keeps coming up. And I've made some fairly conclusive arguments on hell and how several words in Hebrew and Greek became one word in the English, and how foolish that was. So it only became necessary for me to really try and understand this alleged parable in the last few days, to be honest. So, John, I can't help but be very grateful for your letter, and thank you. Thank you very much. But I would love to encourage your response. I don't know that everything I believe is 100% true. I just know what I've come to understand, and I would be very interested in any response you might have to offer.
Yes, for sure. We do appreciate the letter, and any follow-up to it would be welcome. We are, as Vic says, we are travelers on the glory road, and we are looking at things as we go, and we can only tell you what we've seen and what we've experienced of the scriptures thus far. Doesn't mean our mind might not change, so challenge us, and you might get to see one of those opportunities where the mind has changed.
Now, Mike, this week we also heard from Victor O'Brien. Is that the right way to say it? I don't know
how
to
say it.
No, that is
not the right way to say it.
Vic. Oh, so you say, what is a nice boy like you doing out there, Victor O'Brien? Is that right?
Well,
do I sound like Pepe Le Pew?
Kind of an aged version of Pepe Le Pew.
Oh, how much? Hey, Pepe Le Pew. He said to me, he wrote me this, and he said, who are those guys on the Poo Chocolate clip? Thanks, Burris. You're priceless. You do such a fantastic job on production. Well, actually, no. I've just lived a few years, and I know where to go Google some things. So at the end of the last podcast, we and I love playing little Easter eggs at the end. Randy French says, oh, I just go over those things that look like music and all that crap, and I just want to hear what you guys are saying. And I say, I'm just going to hide stuff around this podcast that you'll miss, Randy French. But so I do. And at the end, I always put a couple of Easter eggs. And last week, it was two guys, Brad and Wayne Jacobson. Now, Wayne was one of my traffic stations, or my stations out of Christianity, and he was so useful. Wayne Jacobson still to this day has a podcast. It's on lifestreams.org, and he is one of those people who are standing halfway between Christianity and ourselves, but he is very interesting in what he has to offer. So those two guys on lifestreams.org, they are the people who did the poo and chocolate clip. That is where they were saying that most Christians, they take poop, stir in a bunch of sugar and hope that it tastes like chocolate. And I guess they do.
Could this be madness? What did you hear? What you heard might not be perfectly clear. Take a stand, now we'll be right here. Call questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution. Questions are the lifeblood flowing through the veins of the gospel revolution.
Here, Mike, is another email from Doug Salonen. And he writes, "My mum tells me you used to be the preeminent demonologist at one time, casting out demons left and right." Well, I never saw him go out left and right. I reckon north and south, but still, it could be left and right. Would you please tell one story on the PowerCast this week? Maybe someone is questioning. Anyway, I'm sure you have a story about that. Douglas B. Salonen.
Ah, wow. Talk about dredging up. Well, I'd have to start with my own. Of course, I got into all of this by going through deliverance, having the devils cast out of me. There are so many. Oh, my gosh. How do I tell you how many? I think one of the...
Tell us the most dramatic one. I want to hear something about, you know, their stomach turned inside out and their head went around, revolved. And
well, we never had any of that. There was a lot of manufactured. The thing about people who, quote, cast out devils, they manufacture a lot of evidence. It is greatly exaggerated. I don't know of one exorcism.
Have you ever thought that you'd like to cast the devil out of me?
Yeah, I know it wouldn't work, though. it's like casting bears out of bears.
Man, when you can't cast the devil out of Lucifer. I know that.
Yeah, there's a Bible verse about this somewhere. But let me tell you the one that I think was actually the funniest. I was actually at Dwayne Vanderklok's church, who I recently saw on one of the TV preacher shows. Huh. And poor Dwayne, he's just as boring now as he was then.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
But if you have a magic act, mate, boring can pass.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, and he doesn't even have a magic act, but goodness gracious. And I was known in some groups. You've got to understand, this was not everyone in America, but there were people who said that I was America's foremost demonologist, foremost authority on demonology. And, so one of them was on the platform, and this, church had one of those nice, high platforms. You know, 5, 6, 7 steps to the where the podium was.
To the lofted dignitaries.
Yes. And so this gentleman, it was after we had dismissed a service and people were just beginning to get up out of their chairs and leave. And Pastor Dwayne was over on the right wall talking with someone. And this, kind of distinguished looking gentleman walked up on the stage with me And he said, Mr. Williams, he said, I have come here today because I've heard of you. Your name is spoken in a lot of places. And he said, I understand that you are able to cast out devils. And so I acknowledge that, yes, I do indeed cast out devils. And then he said, well, I have a demon of lust. And he said, I need you to cast it out of me. And, of course, the demon of lust, goodness, you just, that's no big deal, you know. Anyway, I reach out. I'm the guy standing in front of me. I always put my hands on the sides of people's head when I prayed for them or cast devils out of them. And I began to, you know, thank you, Lord, do the little prayer, and then you start using your authority. Yes, in Jesus' name, come out! And that's the way I said it. And so suddenly there was this entanglement that started. He began to react, and there was gyrations. There was kind of a violent thing taking place, and he had on a tie.
Oh, this is not going in a good way.
I don't know how this happened, but I can tell you what happened. And I'm still mad at Dwayne Vanderklok for standing in the corner laughing at me instead of coming to help me. So the next thing I knew, somehow my hand got caught up in his tie. And then he went to the floor. Well, he pulled me to the floor with him.
Spirit of lust.
So we're both on the floor. He's writhing around. Somehow my hand is underneath his neck. And then all of a sudden he does this flipping roll and winds up on his knees and me sitting on his back with one hand around his neck, the other hand flailing free in the air like I was riding a freshly released bucking bronco.
Lust will do that, you know, Mike.
This was, oh my God, and he was bucking like a horse, and I was riding him like a horse.
Oh, lust will do that too.
I was tied to him like a horse, and I looked over at Dwayne Vanderklok, and he was just cracking up laughing. It's like, you know, I need rescued here. So all of a sudden, the horse collapsed. my hand became entangled. The guy got up. Now, this was on stage in front of everybody that was left, which was, you know, 3/4 of the congregation was still there. And the guy got up. He adjusted himself, his suit, his tie, his hair back, and looked at me. And he stuck his hand out and said, thank you very much, and turned around and walked off stage.
Thank you very much for the ride.
Yeah. So there, that's all you get.
All right. So, what can I say? Doug Salonen, would you like my experiences too? Because I have nothing. I never, ever, I was too pure and righteous and holy to ever come into contact with the spirit of lust. But, yeah, Mike Williams, on the other hand, I mean, he's done it all, been there, done that, got the T-shirt and burned it. I'm telling you. Oh, wow. Oh, Mike, that's too funny.
Gospel Revolution.
Mike, this week we heard from Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. And which Elizabeth was this?
This is aren't there two Elizabeths? There's a mother and a daughter. But anyway, this is Moses Garter's wife, Elizabeth.
Oh, yes, of course.
And she says, hello, Mike. How are you doing? Just to inform you, Moses was arrested yesterday, like last time, for teaching. He was on his way back from Narok Town, where he had gone to teach. We suspect the same pastors are involved. will be taken to court tomorrow morning for charges. We are stranded here. He will spend the day in the cells.
Yeah, yes, Barris. And in fact, I wanted to tell you that we did get an update on that letter. And I sent an email back and told Elizabeth that we really needed more information. I was just starving for information to know exactly what happened. And of course, it takes them a little time to digest everything that's happened and get more accuracy. I don't doubt that there are others, such as the pastors there, that have always given Moses such a hard time being some part of this. But as it turns out, there is once again election time coming upon them there. And election time before and after, I mean, it's like terrorism. It's just, my heart breaks for this family. They've done everything that they can to stand up on their own two feet. Moses was teaching. In fact, Moses was conducting a meeting where he was sharing the gospel with a crowd of folks. And a riot broke out nearby, and because of the political unrest. So the police come, from what I understand from Elizabeth. They kind of do this dragnet thing, and they find Moses speaking to this group of people and assumed he was a part of this unrest. And that is where he and the entire group that was listening to the gospel, every gospel revolutionary that was in the meeting, including Moses, was placed under arrest. So this is a process. I'm my heart's broken for them, for Elizabeth, for the boys. His mother is elderly. She came from the village to town to try to be there for help, and she's not just elderly, but she's not in good health. And she also had a little bit of money in savings, very little, but she was able to put up Moses' bail. And then there are other fines and stuff coming up behind this court time. Moses and others of gospel revolutionaries, they were beaten. Quite severely. Moses is injured and needs hospital care, but that's having to be delayed until they can get through some of the court proceedings. He is injured. His back is injured. His arms are bruised severely from the beating that he took from the police. And the other gospel revolutionaries there also have been injured. Of course, have to just speak of this clinically off the top of my head because it gets way too deep inside of me. So that's the only way I know how to be able to communicate this to you folks. This is not a good situation. I am going right after the... we wrap up this recording, I'm going to the bank and transfer some funds there. It's just, this is tough. You know, it's really tough.
So he said, Elizabeth said in the letter, we suspect the same pastors are involved. What does she mean? The same pastors?
Well, in times past, there have been pastors that have brought a lot of harassment against Moses for teaching the gospel.
I mean, pointing the finger so he'd be put in jail?
Yes. It seems that while it wasn't because he was teaching, in the eyes of the police, it's not because he was teaching, it's because he was... accused of being a part of this disturbance that was going on in town. And I, from what I'm understanding, the pastors were more than glad to implicate him as being a part of the unrest that was taking place. So he has people who are affirming that he was indeed a part of this, and they're just lying. Moses wasn't a part of anything political there. Moses doesn't participate in anything political there. He's trying to raise two sons and take care of his wife. And if you're trying to accomplish anything in that country right now, if you get involved in something political, it's going to be, it's not going to be good, you know, unless you win.
So what does Moses do if he doesn't, if he's not politically motivated? What does he do?
Well, you know, Moses conducts our radio shows there. One that is me actually speaking in to the nation of Kenya and then the bordering countries that surround there. This radio show has been going out to. There's been times it's been interrupted because of the inability to fund it. But at those times, goodness, we've had them plant cabbage patches of, you know, a quarter acre of cabbage. And they sold it all to be able to pay for new radio time. We also, we sponsored them to be able to buy a clothing store there. It's, you know, it's a little sidewalk shop in Kenya, and they make funds from that, and they also try to keep their shelves stocked and ready, but they also support the gospel out of that. So they do whatever is at hand, Barris. I've watched these folks do whatever it takes. And yeah, they do whatever it takes to not only to maintain their livelihood, but they do whatever it takes to keep the radio show going and to keep sharing the gospel. And they do share the gospel continually.
So family, when we say we're having a pledge drive, what the pledge drive is for is exactly this. To be honest, and I don't know any other way to say this, to be honest, in North America, we are so glutted, we are so full of information, we just don't need any. But in other, now, and I'm not saying that we don't want to thrive here in North America, I'm just saying that in the Western nations, generally speaking, we are just so full of information and we've just probably had a gutful. But the gospel of grace and peace has application universal. We stand in a place between Christianity and freedom. And that's where we are most useful in North America. But in places like Kenya, where Moses is, this man has had, he has preached to groups where Muslims and Christians and others have all congregated and said,
Hindus, Buddhists.
And said, if this is God, we want to know him better. You want to know why we do pledge drives? It's not to annoy you. Honestly, it's not to use our money on phone calls. It's because, well, this is our dream.
Yeah, it is indeed. And, you know, I make a deliberate choice not to be emotional about this on the PowerCast. I can't do that well when I'm just here by myself sometimes. These people really are part of the heart and soul of the gospel revolution, Barris, and they have been for going on 5 years now. And Moses and Elizabeth were kind of banished by a pastor to a village where he knew people were starving to death, and Moses and Elizabeth wanted to serve the Lord. They have two very small children at the time. And on one of his walking trips, 30-something kilometers, 40, I can't remember now what he used to walk into town. Mm-hmm. And he would go in and get on an internet service and try to search out things about, you know, his situation. And he found Gospel Revolution. And this family's life was changed forever. But not just Moses and Elizabeth and the boys' lives were changed forever, but thousands of people in that area because of that walk. And then he started walking once a week. This man walked many miles once a week to come in and listen to the PowerCast. And so, you know, and of course, Barris is right. You know, when we hear about this, we don't want to shame people for not taking the time to listen to the PowerCast when somebody's walked all this way just to be able to consume it, what the privilege he felt it was. And now he's in jail. He has they've paid the bond to get him out. But if he is found guilty of being a part of this riot, he would be he'll get several years in prison.
Okay, let me just interrupt you here, because this sounds awfully like Paul being hauled up, put into chains, and taken to Rome because of false accusations,
yeah,
of his enemies.
Other charges, not against what he was teaching, but other charges. Yeah,
yeah.
So anyway, that's what's happening in that part of the world in the Gospel Revolution. And if anybody wants to call in, you guys know me. If you have money that you want to send directly to Kenya to help this family out, please let me know. It will, every penny there. We don't keep, 10% of it for our administrative fees or anything like that. If you send a certain amount, that'll be the exact amount that gets transferred to their account there. I'm going to be sending funds from my account today and to try to help out as much as we possibly can. I'm kind of at a loss for words to say much about it. It's just... it's difficult. It's difficult. I think about Elizabeth and the boys, and my goodness, we sure have it nice. What else can I say?
So, from now till the 30th of April, we have our spring pledge drive. For this pledge drive, the goal is $1,000 in new monthly pledges. Any new pledges of $10 to $49 a month will receive a certificate from the Gospel Revolution as an official sponsor. One-time donors of $100 or more will also receive official sponsor certificates. New pledges of $50 a month or more will receive producer certificates, and $100 per month or more will receive executive producer certificates. Now, these certificates are very useful on LinkedIn. I'm told that they're very effective. When you see a movie on TV or you see a show on TV, you will always see at the end of the show the producer and executive producer tags. These are for people who put their hands in their pockets to make it possible to produce that show, and that's what we're doing here. Please call our office at 321-220-4373 and make a pledge today. You can also make your donations at gospelrevolution.com and just hit the donate link. Now, I want to give a plug to your recent series, Predestined to Life. Mm. I just don't know if we can ever stop talking about this series because it's so, well, tell us.
Well, I listened to it myself. I was so interested. I actually listened to it myself, and the folks that know me know that I rarely listen to my own material. But this I did, and I'm really glad that I did, because I was amazed, quite honestly, so many things that I said that I don't remember saying and don't ever remember even thinking. It was a real riot to listen to this series. I was telling somebody that the other day, and they said, "Well, tell me one of them." And I couldn't. I just remember the moment, you know.
Oh, I know what you said. You said, "Put your money where your mouth is and buy it." $11.99.
Well, I did tell them, "Well, I think you're going to have to just listen for yourself." That was my my comeback to them for sure. We want this series out so much. If you cannot afford the $11, please call the office. We want this in your hands. We don't want anything preventing you from being able to get this series. We'll take your money if you got it, and if you don't, just let us know. We'll send the series to you anyway.
And can I say that when we're talking about a pledge drive, when we are speaking about a pledge drive, and we say we want, you know, we would love to fund the gospel going out in these areas, and we're talking about Kenya, and we're talking about Southeast Asia, and we're talking about all around the world, really. Our voice is heard in 187 different countries. When we say that, we're dead set serious, but we are also just as equally serious in saying, if you want to hear this and you don't have the money, tell us.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, and I dare you to find anyone else who says that.
Yeah, definitely. We're not going to allow anyone's finances to prevent them from hearing the gospel, not if we can do anything about it. So, and at this point, honestly, thank you. Thank all of you who've participated in the pledge drive. This is what it does. It promotes the gospel around the world, and we are appreciative.
Wow, I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Michael, what else have we got this week?
Well, just yesterday I was flipping channels and I pulled up Joel Osteen. I always do this anymore because I kind of like to follow track with what these guys are still saying. And I turned it there just in time for him to be telling the story about the and from Genesis about Cain killing Abel. And the way that he described this, he said that the death of Abel was a type and shadow of Christ. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. But he said it was a type and shadow of Christ and went on to explain that how God explained to Cain that because his brother's blood went into the ground, that none of his works would produce fruit anymore. So nothing he planted, nothing he did would produce fruit. And then Joel Osteen had the audacity to say, that's just like Christ. And he said that when the blood of Christ was shed from the cross, that it literally did away with the works of man.
Wow.
That man's works were no longer count. Now, and I was just, it's like, my God, this is fantastic. I've never heard this analogy to Christ before. And I was elated. I can't tell you how thrilled I was to hear this. And then he slid off into, and now none of your bad works, none of your bad works will ever be fruitful again. None of your bad works will ever be able to come and get none of your bad works. And it's like, you just said that the scriptures say that none of the works of his hands would be fruitful.
You mean just not just the bad works?
Yeah, not just the bad, but of course, if it's not the good or the bad, then you can't keep preaching what Joel says.
But, oh, boy.
But it's a great preaching point to say none of your bad works are going to be fruitful against you. That even if you've sinned, it can't be fruitful against you. Even if you've done this or done that, it can't be useful against you. So I was very excited at first, and then, of course, Christianity always shows its ugly head, and it did very quickly on this. And I thought, well, at least the people that are listening to him know that none of their bad works are being fruitful in the eyes of God. That is a step forward. Now, if they ever understand that even their good works are not fruitful in the eyes of God for righteousness, then we'll be at the gospel. So they got a complete revelation of an analogy of Cain, of Abel's blood compared to Christ's blood being shed. They got a very accurate analogy, but then as what Christianity has done with the cross, Joel did with this. And it's just, it's a blatant departure from what it says. Exciting that they got half of it, but that's like, no cigar, sorry. So, but no, I was thrilled at this understanding. Have you ever heard that before? Have you ever heard the comparison?
No, and I'm sitting here staggered.
Yeah. I was too. I mean, it's one I've got to think through. I just heard this yesterday.
Was it last week we said, or the week before we said that we know certain things out of the Bible, but there is so much we know that we don't know yet.
Oh, gosh. And Joel taught me something, and I am very appreciative of that.
Well, and you used to bounce young Joel on your knee once.
No, I didn't.
Your memory's not that good. Are you sure you didn't?
I know for sure that I didn't.
I guess when he was 11 or 12, he was too old for that.
Exactly.
All right. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, the concepts of heresy and blasphemy were invented by religion for the sole purpose of defending doctrines that cannot defend themselves. Don't forget to visit www.theteacherwithin.com. And order your copy of Touching Spirit, The Letters of Minniminicky. This was written by one of our wonderful friends of the Gospel Revolution, Pep Washburn, and it's not a religious book, and yet it is the most spiritual book I've ever read. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free information. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you have received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to stick your hand in your pocket towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how you can participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. While you're there, check out some of our videos. While you're there, check out all of our 3,000 hours free teaching and podcasts, and go and check out the Gospel Revolution Radio run by Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. Just fill your boots. Just put your feet up on the table and enjoy yourselves. And remember, cash is not the only way that you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you would like to invite Mike to your area. It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details, when, where, and why, and we will make that happen. So now, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, 33410. Folks, we love you to pieces. Thank you for contributing to the pledge drive. Again, if any of you want to help out where Moses is concerned and his family, we've got to think through this and figure out what's the best thing we can do for this family. They've been so dedicated to us. I don't want to drop our dedication to them. That's for sure. Thank you so much. We look forward to the very next time, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, but
Better. All right, Mike. Thank you, friend.
Thank you, Bears.
Love you. I love the way you took me by surprise then. Thank you, Mike.
Yes, I finally built up enough courage to do it. How about that?
How about it? All right, friend. You enjoy your day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You too.